confidence, believe me, I am wavy. I need something deeper, money does not stimulate me. Whether you want mansions or go.
Welkom in het tweede uur, de vrijdag met Renk en Justus.
Welkom in the second hour, because we will be speaking English.
Ah ja, in English. Je kunt ook weer meekijken via de live feed op Instagram trouwens. Dat begint je lekker vol te lopen allemaal. Ik zei het straks al in de Nederlandse aankondiging, de Dutch announcement. 500 years of subversity to be experienced, not just seen at the local archives. You're a professional.
Yes.
Professional what?
On many levels.
On many levels.
On many levels. Many chessboards, we were saying earlier. Yeah.
I think for frequent visitors of Casa Rosso, they might know you as the producer of the cabaret there.
Yes, I have monthly right now, we have a new series called the Full Service Cabaret. And actually, there's only three, and it's a matinee, and it's specifically centering full service sex workers, but also the queer community and arts and culture professionals within sex working and queer community.
You know. If I can break in for a minute, we're talking about sex workers and entertainment and in the Stadsarchief, there's an event.
There is an event.
Vijzelgracht.
Vijzelgracht 32.
How do you fit politics in sex work?
Sex work is always political. Uh-huh. It's never not been political. Sex is always political too, whether you like it or not, I think. And specifically in Amsterdam, when you look at the history of sex work over the 500, 600 years it's been here, sex work has always been something to be managed and controlled, mm-hmm. right? Whether it was being kicked off the street and put into the first kind of row of houses. People worked from their living rooms at first, but then they couldn't stand in the doorway, so they got pushed inside the windows, and then,
Closed curtains.
Exactly, closed curtains, open curtains, closed curtains again. So, and the Dutch love to control too, you know? So it's...
That's still the case today. I mean...
And there's control in every sector of the of
work.
The city.
Exactly.
Work. So it's, if you consider it work, mm-hmm. as I do and as you undoubtedly do, there's some control, isn't some control is needed.
Absolutely, but there's two models of sex. Well, actually, a few models of sex work. Mm. What we have in the Netherlands is legalization, and what a lot of sex workers are actually advocating for is full decriminalization, which does give sex workers themselves more autonomy within the work. So we have pretty strong regulations in the Netherlands, both tax-wise.
Sex work is not a crime.
Sex work is not a crime. No,
but when sex work is sort of banished to the outer. Limits of the city in a center. How can sex then be political? How can you feel the politics involved in sex work?
Right, that's the question, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like when not only sex work, but sex work also drives how society views sex as a whole. Every relationship is transactional, and sex work is just like the most surface level of that. It's very clear what the transaction is. Mm-hmm. We have sex. Some money is exchanged, or goods are exchanged, or a washing machine, or a fancy wash. You know, it could be anything, right?
There's just a guy outside walking with a washing machine.
Exactly. It was meant to be. Amazing. Sex is always a transaction on some level, and this transaction, as we do it, one participant gets money for it, and. Now I've lost your original question. When it gets banned to the outskirts, it says not only sex work is taboo, but sex in general is taboo. And it's very antithetical to what people think about what Amsterdam is, which is very liberal in terms of sexuality.
Yeah, and society as a whole, I think. I mean, it's not just a geographical thing, you know, mm-hmm. it happens here, but it's a place in our minds as well, and a place in society which is subversive, and we still have to touch it and to feel whatever it is mm-hmm. that it brings to the city, to society as a whole.
Right. And I think Amsterdam in particular stands out as having sex at the center at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we argue what is sex at that point, but it is very special in this way, for sure.
Amsterdam even allows a panel and performances on Cruising the Wallen, which is about sex workers, in the Stadsarchief.
Yes.
But I had a question.
Yes.
I was intrigued by one of the guys, he's a he, who will perform. This is Mickey. Do you know Mickey?
I do know Mickey, yes.
So there's something in his CV. Mickey is from Romania.
Yes.
He started pole dancing on traffic poles there.
I hope so.
This is outdoors.
Lovely.
But the drivers in Romania didn't appreciate it enough.
So sad.
What did he expect?
He expected the traffic poles here to be friendly, and I hope they are. Can you imagine? I love to see this.
Unfortunately, traffic will stop.
The traffic will stop for sure, and I hope they got some change while they were at it.
Yeah. I want to clean your windows. I do some pole dancing.
Well, Mickey is actually, is a fantastic...
He's a brave man.
Brave person for sure, and very acrobatic and very talented. I can only say Mickey's incredibly talented and very very much a comrade, so I'm very happy to have Mickey there.
Yeah. I think doing this event at Stadsarchief is brilliant, a brilliant move.
Yeah.
I mean, I gather you can sort of reach an audience using this location you couldn't otherwise reach.
Absolutely. It's not my first time putting up a pole in an unexpected location, to be fair. We also, in 2023, did a stripping event at the Outer Carrick, and that was great.
Did they allow it?
They allowed it, but not since. We have to petition the Outer Carrick to have another event there, but I love using both very typical locations. For example, the Casa Rosso, and this theater is spectacular. It hasn't changed since. It's an archival in itself. It's 1987, and they don't even make poles the same way, and this is the first time strippers are going to be a part of an event at the State Archive, and it's about time. I think it's about time, so I'm very excited.
The backdrop, I think, is a photo exhibition.
Yes, so the exhibition is by Dana Luxenberg.
Oh.
Dana.
Now she's world famous.
But I didn't know her when she first reached out.
You didn't know her.
I had no idea. Oh. So I gave her the red light treatment. I heckled her. I was like, who do you think you are coming into, asking sex workers of photos? And then I Googled, and I was like, oh, Tupac and
It's like not
Ginsburg
recognizing Mick Jagger.
So unfortunately, I was put in my place.
Photography and sex workers, they don't really mix as a rule.
Exactly, but I'm actually, interestingly, I'm also a photographer and a sex worker as well. I work in 35
and writer
millimeter
as well,
and writer, and we had to have many gigs these days. I was really impressed by her work, and she asked to take a photo of me in a portrait on the old accordion camera, and so we chose one of the windows that I actually first. Across the street from where I first started working, and my friend and I both got our portraits taken, and with this this accordion camera and this brothel room, it was quite special, and she was really great. And I think that a lot of the times there isn't a sensitivity of most of our relationship to cameras and Diwalas. Like, we get water guns and we shoot cameras, or I'll go around because I lived in the neighborhood and I would go dangle phones over the canal and, harass people for taking photos. And so it was a very different experience to have this old accordion style, 120 millimeter photograph taken of you. It was very respectful, and I really enjoyed that about the experience.
Mercy, I have a question. In your work, you are an active sex worker. Really do the work. At the same time, you try to create a fusion, as I use this word, between arts and communication. It's quite fluid. You try to grab the whole thing.
Yeah.
But is it really possible to turn it in the form of art and get a place in the Oude Kerk, which is specialized in art?
I think
it's a real question.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the art world and sex work has always been intertwined. It's just been who's been in power and who's making the portrait, right? And right now we're kind of coming to a head of the interconnection of sex work and arts and culture, as it were. And I actually don't believe in a separation between the two. Thinking of famous photographers, Nan Goldin was also a sex worker at one point in time, doing sex work to pay for films so that she could go out and make her shows, So there's always been a connection. And if you look at Dutch art, you have these Dutch Renaissance paintings of the prostitute and the Spielhaus, these playhouses. And even the Krasnopolsky was once a famous playhouse, So actually, the high art, the high and the low, and the sex work.
Been intertwined always.
It's always,
Are you afraid of the world being a sort of, Disneyland-like place. I mean, is there room for subversity and subtlety in sex work when people, no, sorry, when people view the Dvala as being a sort of eventful place?
I think that's a sad thing. I don't think there's any going back from this at this point. Mm. That's, I think, the heartbreak in it.
Yeah.
Is that we have Amsterdam, and it hasn't come from the sex workers themselves, I don't think. I think the touristification on behalf of the I Amsterdam campaign from the mayor.
We took care of that. We tore it down.
But it didn't stop, right? And I think that there's still a lot of economic disparity between sex workers who are like, just like entrepreneurs, we're all Zezé payers, we're entrepreneurs, and the bigger franchise owners, and like that there is this kind of kitschiness, people get drawn into it, kind of like moths to a light.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. No, I'm not sorry to interrupt you. But when I watch, I go to the Zeedijk regularly now because of the work I do here. But then you see masses of tourists, they're just gazing. They're not customers. They're not.
Yeah, this is the hard part.
So tourist gazes.
As a customer, I would be, well, a bit afraid to get here because there's also thousands of people. Oh, he's really doing it. He's really doing it.
Yeah, it's a bit cheeky. It's a bit cheeky. I mean, a lot of my customers are tourists, so I'll never bash a tourist for being here. You know, a lot of my income comes from people coming from abroad and being like, ooh, Amsterdam. And it is, I think I have a big respect for people who, and clients who can bridge that gap, right? And risk saying, okay, I'm gonna go for it. I want that one. I'm gonna go for it.
Yeah.
You know, I really appreciate that. But there is, and I'm queer. I look a little bit alternative, so I'm very lucky in that actually. Because even though I don't look like a typical sex worker, like don't have a boob job, I don't have these things. You know, I do attract a certain kind of clientele, and I feel really happy about that because I do have a lot of nice, vulnerable people who come to me who are actually quite interested in that kind of experience. But I have also a history as an escort, which I bring into this, which a very different kind of dynamic.
Well, so. Do you get conversations from customers? Can you say customers?
Yeah, customers.
You know, there's people who sort of look upon you as being a social worker rather than a sex worker.
Well, it's part of it.
It's care labor, absolutely. Erotic labor is also care labor. It's also social work. It's also therapy. Yeah, it's also sometimes it's integrated into the work on a verbal level. Sometimes it's just like experiencing like body intimacy is also very important for many people, and also as a kind of as a somatic kind of therapy in a way.
It's so sad and beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, I think if we were more connected, a broad stroke here, but if we were more connected as a society, you know, sex work
would be
more.
There would be no sex workers.
Well, no, I think sex workers would still, I think transactional sex would exist in any case. I think that there's something really down, dirty, raunchy and needed about transactional sex. Maybe not for everybody, but if there's something really special about having sex with somebody you're really connected to only on a transaction. It's alleviating somehow. You don't have to care. I get your emotional baggage. You don't get my emotional baggage. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of, you know, and I would hire a worker for that, you know, if I wanted a nice moment, you know?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. How has your relationship to Dvala changed throughout the years?
Yeah, I mean, I've only started visiting Amsterdam since 2021 or so.
Five years now.
Is it really? Yeah, I guess so. Time flies. But I think when I first came here, I was actually quite shocked by Dvala because, I said earlier, I'm queer and my history of sex work and working is really steeped in like queer sex work and learning from queer sex workers and trans sex workers. And so when I came here for the first time, I always will have a special place in my heart for any sex work or any whore, you know, they're very dear to me. Mm-hmm. But I was like, whoa, it's like next level system amenity.
Well, where did you come from?
I was living in Berlin before, and I'm from the States. So, which is, sex work has a very different relationality. It's very criminalized. So, of course, like seeing sex work, I think most people are kind of in awe of this, like, it's just there. You walk by this kind of, not necessarily proletarian, but you can, like, walk into the door. It's just right there in front of you. The door can open, right?
Yeah.
And maybe something about transparency in Dutch society, but whatever.
But in America, it's different. That's what
yes,
I get from
yeah, it's very criminalized, exactly.
It's criminalized?
It's criminalized, yeah. But here, I was saying earlier was that, yeah, it was very the stark difference between my kind of birth into queer and trans sex works. The aesthetics, the community is very different. It's very cis here. It's very cis feminine oriented. Of course, we have an area for trans women to work as well. But yeah, it's very, there's one kind of aesthetic, and my goal with the full service productions was to kind of break free of this, like, it needs to look a certain way. It can be raunchy, it can be very queer, and that can, the sex working community and the queer community have always been.
Mercy, now yeah. Don't get angry with me,
yeah,
but so I don't know, you said I'm a queer sex worker.
Yeah.
I don't know what queer means.
Yeah, okay, fair.
It happens.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, for me, I mean, queer is both an identity that I take on as someone who's not attracted to many genders and of people of many different sexualities,
uh-huh.
Right? But also it's a political position for me as well. So a way to be against systems and somehow the normative systems are against, on the outskirts.
No, I understand.
Okay.
Yeah. So what did you think of the TV series, Males of the Valle?
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to have had an impact.
Yeah, I got some clients from it.
So it worked in a way.
It worked in a way.
It's lovely to look at, but is that over-romanticized, would you say?
Absolutely, but I think it's hard not to over-romanticize Davala.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of its qualities and one of its lineages is it has a proclivity towards over-romanticization.
Well, if you speak to someone in Syria who has once been in Amsterdam, he said, yes, the red light district, Davala. Yes, I know. I say so. It is known all over the world.
Yeah, it's known everywhere. And that's why I think Davala in Amsterdam in particular, I mean, sex work gets done in many different places in many, many different ways. But I when you look at Davala in the middle of this like canals, and it almost looks like it's sending a signal to the rest of the world somehow.
Yeah.
And I think having, again, the red light and sex work as a part of its history for half of 500, 600 years.
We owe it
special.
To the sailors.
Yeah, well, that's also part of the filthy history in a way, is that the red light exists there because of Dutch history of colonization. And actually all the buildings that we work in are also a part of this kind of colonial past as well. And I think that deserves its own reckoning and something that people also don't talk about too much as well. But I also like to think sex workers as people who get to cleanse money a little bit. Like if it comes through my hands, then it's...
They've always been here. I mean, for 500 years, it's been a constant factor. We've had sailors from all over the world come here, live here, and go away or stay.
Yeah.
But sex workers throughout the centuries have been here,
Heaven's
a constant
Street.
Factor.
Yeah.
That's really special. I mean, that should in itself be on the list of intangible heritage.
Right. But that also gets tricky. It's like when it becomes intangible heritage, it's like, I know there's also other buildings that got seen as heritage sites, and then what can be done in there gets, when it becomes a museum,
but
it becomes
intangible
tricky.
Heritage.
Yeah.
It's not confined to a building, you know.
Fair.
It could be a Christmas site.
Sorry. Should UNESCO protect the Amsterdam Wallen with all that's in it?
I think
that's
we
very,
are.
Yeah,
already.
You are UNESCO heritage. The buildings are, at
yeah.
least. And like within, I think like where I'm sitting is heritage,
yeah.
technically.
Yeah.
What gets done inside? I don't know. This is a very tricky question. And I don't know if I need an institution to validate.
It would really be nice. I think good for this country as well.
Yeah.
If we could get that acknowledged as being intangible heritage.
Yeah, I think it's a very touchy thing and it needs a little bit more contemplation because once a kind of work becomes intangible heritage, and I think sex work is simultaneously something that's very tangible, you know.
Yeah.
And
it's
the body, it's
it
money,
be, yeah.
it's the well, so, now it's pinning, but yeah, you know.
Mercy, one other question.
Yeah.
You have poetical sentences from time to time, you know your way around in arts, but there are many sex workers who are not connected to your theme of arty farty sex work.
Can I coin
so
that?
How do you reach out to them within your community?
But they're my colleagues, you know.
I think you and Tobacco will meet in a moment. I think you like each other. I told you before the broadcast.
Hi.
Hey, Stadsarchief, were you allowed to do everything you wanted? I mean, in that space,
yeah,
given
I wanted,
space.
Yeah, I eventually I want. to do something in the bigger space, like in this like grand hall. But we're actually up in the second floor where the old tellers used to be, right? So we'll actually be kind of perched on this old teller marble thing, desk. And I mean, what I do is I trust my performers to bring it, and I don't ask them what they're doing.
Well, so you know them well.
I think it's better to ask for forgiveness and permission a lot of the time, so we're going to see how far they go. And don't tell Nikki. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, basically, yes. And I hope for more. And I'm very thankful for Dana for inviting me and the museum for inviting me as well. So thank you to the States.
Very good move, I think. Very good move.
I think, good on their parts too, It's really nice. Come on.
So, let's see now. It's at Stadsarchief. I'm just going to look up the time. Do you know it?
It's from 3 to 4:30.
Oh yeah, yes, yeah.
And the dirty secret is that we're actually oversold. We're sold.
Oh, so you can't go.
You can't. You could try. You can. It depends on how charming you are, perhaps. But I never say you can't go. But if you sneak in, I'm not gonna, say anything about it.
Yeah. Okay. So that's an invitation. Wijsselstraat 32.
Yeah. But if you miss us on tomorrow, we have another full service cabaret on the 15th of February at the Casa Rosso, and this is on the Day of Paid Love. So it's a celebration of sex work, and we're very proud.
The Day of Paid Love.
It's a national holiday here. So very grateful for it. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's Boston at the Hollywood. Show him the way. He's moving to Hollywood. He's moving to Hollywood.
He's been in and out of those places. Seeing eyes that spoke to him from seven empty places. Seven empty places. Yeah. He's on his way. He's moving to Hollywood. He's passing into Hollywood. Show him the way. He's moving to Hollywood. He's hopping into Hollywood. Oh, and then the Hollywood. At the hop, at the hop. You know he's gonna be dressed to kill. He's gonna find some brand new thrill. Whatever it is he's looking for, you better tell him that there's so much more. And Hollywood. Bye.
al die klinkende namen met die Annie M.G. Schmid heeft samengewerkt, zou je haast denken dat het een Amsterdamse aangelegenheid is geweest. Maar ze komt natuurlijk uit Zeeland.
Maar ze was ontsnapt naar Amsterdam, waar ze meer zichzelf kon zijn.
Ja, dat komen we misschien zo meteen nog op. Maar het geboortehuis van Annie M.G. Schmid, dat is erfgoed. En aan de telefoon heb ik Hendrik Flikweert van bij Annie Thuis, Stichting bij Annie Thuis. Hoi Hendrik.
Hallo, goedenavond.
Jullie zijn een crowdfunding begonnen om het geboortehuis van Annie M.G. Schmid aan te kopen, hè?
Ja, dat klopt. Afgelopen zaterdag zijn we gestart.
Want welke nalatenschap heeft zij achtergelaten in haar geboortehuis? Want ze heeft er niet heel lang gewoond, toch?
Kapellen in Zeeland.
Kapellen, ja. Ja, ja.
Ik denk dat ze zo'n 25 tot 30 jaar in Zeeland uiteindelijk heeft gewoond.
Ja.
Destijds is ze nog wel een keer uit Zeeland geweest. Maar ik denk 25 tot 30 jaar.
Oh, dat is toch een flinke tijd.
Ja. Ja, dat vind ik ook.
Ja. Haar vader was dominee in Capelle, herinner ik me dat goed?
Ja.
Ja,
ja, dat klopt. Staat ook bij de kerk, hè?
Ja, klopt.
Het is een Nederlandse
hervormde kerk. En het geboortehuis staat aan het kerkplein.
Want bij Annie Thuis, dat gaat niet alleen over de aankoop van het huis, maar er komt een soort Annie M.G. Schmid museum in, hè?
Nou, museum is een heel groot woord. Okay. Een museum vergt heel veel voorbereiding natuurlijk. En ja. We hebben al een heel mooi museum, maar een beleving. Ik hou het meer op een beleving.
Okay.
Dus de bedoeling is in principe, als het allemaal door mag gaan, dat het een sociale lunchroom wordt voor mensen met afstand tot de arbeidsmarkt. En dat omringt, zodra je daar binnen loopt, dat je een beleving, een Annie-beleving hebt. Dat kan in de zin van woorden zijn. Ook, ja.
Ga je dan Jip en Janneke horen als je binnenkomt? Of hoe ziet dat eruit? Ik probeer een voorstelling te maken.
Ik ben een nuchtere, realistische ziel. Zover wil ik nog niet denken.
Mm-hmm.
Maar ja, gewoon gezellige muziek. Misschien ook van Hardy Banning. Hey, daar is natuurlijk ook heel veel mee gedaan. En daar hebben we ook al een piano van aangeboden gekregen.
Oh, van hemzelf?
Als het allemaal door mag gaan. Ja.
Dat is heel bijzonder.
Er was iemand uit Amsterdam ook. Ja. En die heeft een half jaar geleden met onze contact opgenomen. Van, ik zie jullie initiatief. Geweldig. Mocht het allemaal doorgaan, dan heb ik hier nog een piano staan. Nou, ja, dat is toch geweldig als je zoiets op je pad komt.
Ja, zeker. Ze heeft ook heel veel vrienden natuurlijk in Amsterdam. Hè? Mensen die haar heel goed hebben gekend en meegewerkt.
Ja.
En haar hebben voorgelezen jarenlang. Dat zijn invloedrijke mensen ook. Dat is mooi als je die zou kunnen bereiken. Ik weet dat er een aantal meeluisteren nu.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dat is heel fijn. Ik vind het gewoon heel erg belangrijk dat het geboortehuis blijft bestaan. Dat het niet verdwijnt achter de voordeur waar iemand met zijn gezin woont. En precies van wat je net al met die inleiding gaf, het is erfgoed. En dan denk ik, ja, daar moeten we iets mee. En Annie is van ons allemaal.
Het zit diep in uw hart, de liefde voor Annie M.G. Schmid, begrijp ik. Ja. Als kind al die boeken gelezen.
Dat valt op zich wel mee. Maar ja, goed, ik ben iemand die wel 36 jaar een boekhandel. Dus ja, goed, ik verkoop nogal wat boeken van Annie. En ja, ik heb Annie een paar keer ontmoet. En ik vond het gewoon een geweldig mooi mens.
Nou, ik ben er ook groot mee geworden, hoor.
Mijn volgende vraag was, als je in een boekwinkel werkt, weet je precies of kinderen Annie M.G. Schmid nog lezen? Is dat aan de hand?
Ja, zeker. Nou, zeker. Ik heb toevallig vanmiddag nog zo'n dikke Jip en Janneke verkocht. En heb ik zoiets van, dat staat gewoon op een lijstje van een kindje wat net geboren is, zeg maar. Snap je? Ik bedoel, een moeder die maakt een lijstje en die wil het dikke Jip en Janneke. Ja, nog steeds. Zeker. Ja,
en dat brengt mij...
Ik lees nog steeds.
Ik had een gemene vervolgvraag, misschien wel niet een gemene, maar ik hoorde net, het wordt een plek en niet een museum, dat de bescheiden Zeeuwse zou iets... Zoiets iets zeggen, zoals een sociale ontmoetingsplek voor mensen met afstand tot de arbeidsmarkt. Maar er zijn natuurlijk ook kinderen die langskomen in Capelle, of misschien wel Amsterdammers die denken, ik wil dit wel eens zien. Annie is in Amsterdam ook een begrip.
Nee, maar dat mensen daar aan het werk zijn, bedoel ik.
Oh, dus, dat, sorry, dus, dat had ik niet
dat
begrepen.
Dat is een sociale een zinvolle dagbesteding hebben. En dat mensen die daar een kopje koffie komen willen drinken, de beleving hebben van Annie. Dus yes. het is echt gewoon dat mensen met een afstand tot de arbeidsmarkt, en dat kan van een kind met of een mevrouw of meneer met syndroom van Down zijn, maar ook iemand die al heel lang thuis zit en ook weer mee wil doen in de sociale werkmaatschappij.
En die mogen werken voor Annie MG. Maar is Capelle ook, ik ken Capelle helemaal niet, is dat ook een plaats waar veel toeristen komen?
Ja, wel steeds meer. We hebben gemeente Capelle en dat heet Wemeldingen. Dat zit natuurlijk aan het water. Ierseke zit heel dichtbij.
Precies.
Dus
mooie omgeving.
Capelle is wel meer, steeds meer. Ja, het is gewoon wel een mooie omgeving, klopt. Ja.
En, heb je ook contact met Flip of met andere familie van Annie?
Ja, zeker.
Wat zei je?
Zeker weten.
Leuk zeg.
Ik 6 februari vorig jaar heb ik contact met hun opgenomen. En voordat je aan zo'n plan begint, zeg maar, wil je toch wel goedkeuring hebben. Omdat je met erven te maken hebt.
Rechter
en die reageerde positief.
Ja, dat is
die reageerde positief.
Dat is moeilijk om met die nalatenschap om te gaan, hè, denk ik.
Hoor ik wel eens.
Hoor ik ook wel eens.
Het zijn lastige mensen als je iets wil met Annie M.G. Schmid. Maar het is gewoon gelukt.
Ik ben van de zomer, afgelopen zomer, op een van de heetste dagen ben ik naar Amsterdam geweest. Gesproken met de zoon en de kleinzoon. Oh, gewoon een heel leuk gesprek gehad. Ik had alles bij me. En ik was heel enthousiast. Ik bedoel, mensen, ik had zoiets van, nou, leuk, groen licht. En toen zei een van de erven van, ja, maar ho, we moeten nog wel een overeenkomst. Toen had ik zoiets van, oké. En dat is een wereld die ik niet kende. Die ken ik inmiddels.
Wat stond daar in die overeenkomst?
Sorry, wat zei je?
Wat stond daar in die overeenkomst?
Was het een beetje te doen?
De erven zijn gewoon heel zuinig op alles wat of met Annie te maken heeft en met recht.
Ja.
Dus die willen dan bepaalde afspraken maken van hey, je moet daar zorgvuldig mee omgaan en. Ja, dat doen we ook. We doen heel veel in overleg. En dat geeft mij ook gewoon het rustige gevoel dat we min of meer toch een klein beetje samen doen.
Prachtig hoor. Ik vind het echt een prachtig initiatief.
Hey, leuk te horen.
Ja, en waar staat de teller voor de crowdfunding op dit moment?
Ja, ik ben nog volop bezig met bedrijven. Die ga ik vanaf volgende week benaderen. Want je hebt gewoon grote klappers nodig. Daar ben ik gewoon heel eerlijk in.
Ja, ja.
En de actuele teller zit op een kleine €11.000. Dus dat is nog niet zoveel.
Maar ook niet
weinig. Het zijn allemaal wel.
Weinig.
Nee, dat bedoel ik. Het zijn allemaal wel hele enthousiaste mensen.
Ja, in een week ook.
Ja, we zijn nog geen weken aan de
slag. Nee, dat bedoel ik.
Nee.
Ja,
maar als ik zie. Ja, sorry.
Nee, ga verder. Ik onderbrak je.
Oké. Nou goed, afgelopen week was ik op de beurs, op de boekenbeurs in Apeldoorn. En als ik dan zie wat voor reacties ik krijg als ik mijn brief overhandig van hey, hallo, wij zijn Stichting bij Annie Thuis en we willen Annie M.G. Schmid haar geboortehuis in ere herstellen, zeg maar. Of tenminste een beleving van maken.
Ja.
Hoeveel enthousiasme daar dan leeft, dan heb ik zoiets van ja, dat geeft mij wel. En ons bestuur natuurlijk, de power om van ja jongens, Annie is echt van ons allemaal.
Ja.
Wie is er nou niet mee opgegroeid? En dat sterkt ons om door te zetten. Om allerlei initiatieven uit te voeren, zeg maar.
Ja, wat me nou ook leuk lijkt, is dat je in het huis ook wereldlijke goederen uitstalt. Variërend van haar schrijfstoel, misschien op een pen, ik weet niet, tot haar sigaretten. Zijn er mensen bij wie je terecht zou kunnen daarvoor?
Bijvoorbeeld de familie van Annie?
Ja, bijvoorbeeld.
Er zijn heel veel. Ik heb in de afgelopen periode heb ik al heel veel spullen aangeboden gekregen.
Oh, nee.
Niet van Annie zelf, maar over Annie, zeg maar.
Oh ja.
Dus ja, er zijn er ook een paar mensen die zeggen van goh, als het straks open mag gaan, nou, dan heb ik wat leuks voor je. Dus ja, wat ik in eerste instantie ook zeg, eerst plan A, dat is het huis bij elkaar proberen kruisvinden en. Dan gaan we over tot plan B. Stap voor stap.
Heel veel praktisch. Even praktisch. Want er kan natuurlijk een enorme hoop spullen loskomen. Van of met of gemaakt door Annie de boeken. Hoeveel ruimte is er in het oude huis?
Nou, we hebben 2 verdiepingen.
Oké, dan.
Het is een enorm mooi pand. Voor de mensen die het leuk vinden. Kerkplein 57. In Capelle. En dat is een heel mooi, groot, wit, statig, karakteristiek pand.
Ja, ik vind het schitterend.
Met van die mooie...
Schitterend initiatief.
Die mooie raamverdelingen, weet je wel. Ja, geweldig.
En bij annithuis.nl, dat is de website waar mensen naartoe kunnen. En ik wil ook mensen oproepen om toch vooral geld te doneren aan dit schitterende initiatief. Hendrik Flikkert, mag ik jou danken?
Hartstikke
bedankt. Bedankt voor jullie aandacht.
Oké. Okay.
Fijne avond.
Hoi. Ja.
Dag. Red Light Jazz Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4. I love the way it flows. I love the way it grows. There's something in this sound that takes me far. It's like a special song, can move my mood along. But I cannot say you'll hit through my guitar. She told me add the bass line and everything will be alright. She told me that the groove is mine, it will take us through the night. And where I'll go, can't explain, I'll never know. But it's beautiful. You can't take this away from me. The way I hear the melody, the way it's bring clarity, it's running through me. You can't take this away from me. Oh, the way I hear the melody, the way it's bring clarity, it's running through me. I love the way it sings, all the joy that it brings. Remember skating down the road towards the park. I could never say no. You with that summer glow. The music gives me sun when winter starts. She told me at the baseline, everything will be alright. She told me that the beat is mine. It will rock through the night. And where I go, but it's beautiful. You can't take this away from me. Oh, the way I hear the melody, the way it brings clarity, running through me. You can't take this away from me. Oh, the way I hear the melody, the way it brings clarity, running through me. Hey, you can't take this away from me. The way I hear the melody, the way it brings clarity. To me, come on, y'all. You can't take this away from me. Oh, the way I hear the melody, the waves bring clarity. Running through me, yeah, it's running through me. Yo, I wear notes like coats, blues like dudes. Warmth in the rhythm, soul that glues. The bounce in my bones, jazz in my spine. The hop is my home, rap is my grind. I'm grinding on the backside of life, we dance. She threw me a chance, her hands in my pants. Actually, my pockets holding me tight. Whispering a dream I can hold in the night. Blood tight, a rhythm that's throbbing my vein. Wake up to write it on the pad, the pains. Like church, the organ will invite the tears. Like birth, the crying let you know I'm here. Held by the song that gave me a name. Dressed by the verse that gave me a claim. It's just bass in the line, safe to inhale. And if you live well, belong your years and the stay you will be. My time is octave to play for the tree. It's rooted in every single nerve in me. The nerve of he who ignores the key. The music that opens the mind to be free. Whenever your hot head it pours you a breeze. Beneath the clouds you allow to see. In clarity, through harmony. Someone harming me, that won't be done. I stand protected by the laws of fun. I am perfected through the rhymes of run. Walk it this way and leave the party stunned. This music, it launched me with no aim. I've landed on some plane. Where I am, I can't explain or never know. But it's beautiful, so you can't take this away from me. Oh, the way I hear the melody, the waves bring clarity, running through me.
Come on, y'all.
You can't take this away from me.
Yep.
Oh, the way I hear the melody.
And Mercy is St. J's next cabaret will be on February 15th at the Casa Rosso from 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Find tickets in the at Full Service Productions bio on Instagram. So look that up.
Well, the advertising was excellent, Renk.
Sorry?
Excellent advertising, Renk.
Yeah, perfect. Speaking of which, stories have to be advertised and poetry has to be advertised because it's wonderful. Chiwaka Kelly, you're a known poet and you're performing as well at Stories of the Uncanny and Supernatural at Labyrinth Poetry Night, which you're
Amstelveenseweg.
Amstelveenseweg. I love the uncanny and supernatural. Please tell me something uncanny and supernatural.
Yes, you're uncanny.
Yeah, and supernatural.
Yeah, well, don't tell him. We spare him.
So. Yeah, yeah. Spare him, yes. But, well, beautiful segue, right? You're really great at your craft, speaking of storytelling and communication.
You.
Really beautiful segue. And yes, it's at Labyrinth, and you say the street name very well, so I'll defer to you and your
Amstelveenseweg.
Yes.
Amstelveenseweg.
Yeah.
We have a connection.
Yeah,
here.
53, ja.
Zo.
Oké, zo. Ja,
heel goed hoor.
Ja, dankjewel.
We're just having fun. Sorry, we're not talking about a subject. But
I'm not sorry. We're having fun. No. I like to have fun. That's important. I'm a Gen X baby. We know how to fun. We know how to fun. We know how to work. Work hard, play hard. So, Renk, your question about uncanny and supernatural, you injected into that you're interested in that. What particular, what's your particular interest?
I've had loads and loads and loads, loads of supernatural things, experiences,
yes,
throughout the years. Really a lot, like precognitive dreams to seeing spirits and on and on and on. I rarely talk about these things.
Okay.
But I do know on national radio. Why not?
Well, but in Africa, all this is totally normal.
Yeah, true. Or Mexico, or, you know, loads of other countries.
Sure. Yeah, Africa in particular, it's a strong Christian community. And so talking about spirits isn't verboten, and that might be the case in other Christian communities. So let's break ground here. World debut, Red Light Jazz Radio, Supernatural. Let's say I'm 4 years old in San Francisco. This is my hometown.
Yeah.
And I had a supernatural experience.
Mm-hmm.
That let me know the voice I'd been hearing up until that point, like when I was in diapers and before this experience, was the Holy Spirit. So I had my first like conscious encounter and conversation with God. And this is a profound experience. It happened while I was at preschool. And it helped me kind of reconcile the voice I'd been hearing before on guidance.
So you didn't know what was happening to you. Is that correct?
No, I knew. There's a knowing that accompanies that.
Yes, okay. Yes.
It's not like, what is this? I wonder what this is. There's a knowing with that presence. There's no second guessing. When it's the Holy Spirit, when it's God, there's a knowing. If it's something else that has tension or chaos to it, that is another spirit, not the Holy Spirit.
Were you born into a Christian family? Did you visit church or...
That's a really good question. My grandmother's German Catholic. My grandfather is from Ireland Catholic. Right? Mm-hmm. So I was baptized some days after being born. I attended Mass sometimes with my grandmother, sometimes with my aunt. She was the head cantor for Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. So I attended with her. My mom gave me a Bible and taught me the Lord's Prayer. And she said, choose your own path, find your own way. So...
Anyway, you did.
So there was a sensibility, but I wasn't structured to say prayers at dinner. I wasn't structured to go to school or something. But I did seek that out externally, but also internally.
So how did that drive you throughout the years? What did that do to you in the way you approach life?
Sure. Many of the conversations I had as a child with adults, they would soon forget they were speaking with a child. I can put it that way. And an only child often surrounded by adults that they would come to me to receive. If we're looking at it from a Christian perspective or in the Bible, if you go to Corinthians, there was the gifts of spirit. So gifts of wisdom or knowledge or prophecy.
The gift of word traditionally comes with a paranormal activity, you might say, like the Greek poet. words, if you have the gift of the word, you have the gift of foresight too. The two go hand in hand, you know, they have done for centuries.
Yes, yes. So there's a deep history there. In terms of kind of like practical relationships, I was giving word of knowledge and prophetic wisdom and healing to adults that were meeting me as a child. So
a big responsibility. So
yes, sir.
Starting in a Christian environment, let's say you ended up reading poetry at the Amstelveense Weg.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Yeah, how's that leap? Well, my poetry career started when I was about 8 or 9 years old. My teacher entered me in a contest, unbeknownst to me. My prayer was referencing God. I don't remember it verbatim, but it was something like, I believe in God because of nature. Mm. And I won a contest I didn't know I was entered in, and I was asked to show up and perform it in front of an audience and take pictures and what have you. And then I learned that my lineage is, I'm coming from a lineage of poets and musicians on my Irish side.
So yeah, of course. It's
compulsory.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the German side.
It's in the genes.
I would love to hear something.
Yes?
In form of poetry or prose or a story, perhaps.
Okay,
will you?
I'd be happy to. Just
please
do it.
Before?
You're branding Nike here. Now you're a Nike ad in red light. Okay, get your Nikes at Pata, our neighbor.
I tried to save some time. Thank you.
Yes, okay. Thank you very much. Right, so on the theme of supernatural and a religious spiritual theme, I was reflecting on my children suffer for lack of knowledge. And I was reflecting on the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve and deception that infiltrated that. Now,
okay.
Here we go.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Try it. Find out. It begins in the flesh, in the amygdala, in synapses signaling for recognition, in purpose and destiny etched into a playpen. San Francisco, in diapers and my inquisitive nature, when I held Major Arcana with custodianship, my mom rushed to pluck interest from my toddlerhood, leaving my footprints to study the carpet. In our one-bedroom apartment, in diapers and my inclination to gather, when I set mysteries with conviction, my mom leapt again to retrieve her holy rosary from my intuition. Leaving my thoughts to collect more questions. Decades passed without bid or contrition, adding gravity to adolescence until weight became habit and crooked letters normalized city by the bay. The archer evades commitment through ignorance, through will, through trivia and abuse, through haphazard status quo, until the quiver emptied near the blur and his purpose without arrows becomes vestige for spirits, for negotiation, for the 30 that fell for his lie that tried to play God. Oh, but the accuser is sly and strong and sexy. And he knows the law we pretend doesn't exist. Through torpidity, through pills, through idolatry and gamble, through haphazard status quo and the need to win, so far removed from the importance of learning to lose. Timestamp. It's only a game. I celebrated my grandpop when realizing my decision carved a path for his royal checker piece to engender my humility. King me. Sportsmanship courted coronation and stressed my resilience, my faith, my capacity to learn in the flesh, in the amygdala, in the cerebral cortex, in synapses signaling for recognition, in purpose and destiny etched into a playpen. Centuries passed without bid or contrition before spirits acquired what ambiguity bought them. When Adam turned his ear and didn't notice, when the formation of doubt emerged in slithery whisper, when Eve's genius turned on itself, when the scientist had to know, when we learned it wasn't a game. Try it. Find out. Malcolm, you have stumbled, slipshod and submerged beneath the sea, low-ranking fiends spoiled fruit until the quiver emptied and moved the target hard, hard, hard right. Each arrow, time stamped and petrified, a trophy wife for the accuser, parades the courts of heaven with glass between his molars. Her cosmetics, bloodline rouge, her lipstick no longer conceals. I can no longer conceal. Familiar and monitoring, territorial and diabolic. They're calculated haunts in churches and brothels, in tattoo parlors and hospitals, in the brokenhearted warfare of spinsters and penny-pinching widows that rejoice for the wrong reason. In pharmakia, where children are prescribed arrowheads and sound bites, in open mics and safer spaces, in his comment about minors and not knowing what's appropriate, in the double mastectomy I refuse to call top surgery, and antecedents and parts of speech that invoke a legion through the use of them, in the pages from Kirk and Madsen, in the women I've pleasured, in San Francisco, in clubs, in stalls, in the boss's office, on the back of her motorcycle, on the pool table, me calling the shots. In the woman I've pleasured, Jezebel, Lilith, Leviathan, Lucifer, and why they aroused me, and why they unsettled me. And when I learned why they aroused me, I understood why I was unsettled. Try it. Find out. Before the courts of heaven no longer conceal my cries for the paraclete, for one drop, for mercy, I plead my case. Oh, but your honor, the accuser is sly and strong and sexy, and he knows the law we pretend doesn't exist.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, the way you know, it starts like, it's like listening to mythology, and you sort of pull it back to your very, very personal space. Mm. And it sounded, the last time you were here, I think the poem reminded me of a fight. It had a round one and then round two. And this sort of pulls yourself through the ages to here. But there's still that the sense of judgment in it.
Yes.
I mean, you're not actually judging, but you can feel something's coming.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a darkness looming.
Yes. So I have to, I'm looking at this conversation with Jesus and with Lucifer, mm-hmm. and studying what the law is. And this one line, my children suffer from lack of knowledge. So ignorance.
You meant divine law.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The way things should be according to God.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So this is a very intimate subject, and speaking of supernatural experiences throughout my life, mm-hmm. different education around those laws through the Holy Spirit.
Oh, sorry.
Boom.
That doesn't mean we're out of time. Yeah, for today, that is. So people can go to labyrinthamsterdam.nl and you can read all about the Labyrinth Poetry Night.
Yes, and Queer Poetry Night is this Tuesday. It's the fourth Tuesday of each month at Pakhuis de Zwijger, but we'd love to see you at Labyrinth.
Okay, pakhuisdezwijger.nl, daar zal het vast ook op staan. Thank you so much, Dr. Kelly.
Thank you so much.
Woo! Bye.
Doei.